You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Alan Show here on this Friday. That's right, it's a Friday. Weekend approaching. I'll see if I can stick the landing here on the program today, and it'll help that I've got two wonderful in-studio guests a little bit later in the program. At the bottom of the hour, Dr. Alan Alday is back with us, my good friend, who's a behavior analyst and professor at the University of Kentucky, on to talk about St. Francis's math when it comes to family behavior issues. So that should be interesting. If you recall, last time we applied Kenny Rogers' The Gambler to parenting concerns. So we'll see what's going on in that very smart noggin of Dr. Alday. And then in the second hour, starting in the second segment, Jessica McFarland, MD, Doctor of Palliative Care at the University of Kentucky. Jessica is married to, I guess they just passed their six-month anniversary, my good friend Jason Hall, Executive Director of the Catholic Conference of Kentucky, who's a regular on the program. They were longtime friends before walking the aisle together this past May, but we'll have Jessica on to talk about palliative care, addressing why it's important, what it is, as well as some of the misconceptions that are had by people, particularly loved ones or even themselves who are in a state of aggressively moving toward death, and how can pain management be a real gift? I mean, when you think about it, things like palliative care in terms of anesthetics and the rest, not been with us all that long, really. It's pretty remarkable and really one of the most dignifying and humanitarian things that we've been able to develop in medical science. So we'll look forward to having Jessica on the program to talk about that in the second hour. We, of course, always welcome your calls, 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to be a part of the program. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought or a response via Facebook or Twitter. Mike Allen Show is the handle. We'll do some other things to do as well today. We'll talk about the Pope and the Burgermeister, sports as a religion, and a worrisome trend in animated films. All that coming up on the program today. I don't really have big weekend plans. It's kind of nice. Even last weekend for a while that I don't have something going on. So I intend as much as possible to enjoy. I've got some papers to grade and stuff for my class at school, but I plan, hopefully, God willing, to sleep in a little bit tomorrow. I guess I need to start thinking about Christmas shopping. It's a little early for me. Usually, maybe around December 19th, December 20th is when I really get rolling, but see if I can turn over a new leaf. We'll see how that goes. I came across this interesting article yesterday, and I wanted to get to it, and I want to make sure that we do. It was about Pope John Paul II, Pope St. John Paul II, and the recently deceased dictator of Cuba, Fidel Castro. This was a story from the Vatican Insider, told by the former spokesman of Pope St. John Paul II, Joaquin Navarro Walls. He was the official director of the Holy See Press Office, and he recently talked about in an interview with the Italian daily La Stampa about the Pope's first visit to Cuba in January of 1988. Navarro Wall says this: "Fidel Castro kept me talking for 6 hours. He was fascinated by John Paul II, and although he was jealous of his inner life, I sensed he wanted to delve deeper. I told him he was a lucky man because the Pope prayed for him every day. For once, he was silent." So they asked Navarro Wall, how did the Pope's visit to the island come about after he had helped bring down the Berlin Wall, one of the last bastions of communism? John Paul II
Navarro-Wall said, had been sending delegates to Cuba for a decade or so. The Vatican Minister of Foreign Affairs also went. The Pope was eager to visit the island, but he still hadn't received an invitation. Finally, in November of 1996, Fidel Castro came to Rome for a meeting. He was received in the Vatican and formally invited the Pope there. We worked for the whole of 1997 to organize it, Navarro-Wall said. 3 months prior to the visit, he went on to Havana to meet Fidel in October of 1997. He said it was a long meeting that went on for 6 hours. He was fascinated, as I said, with John Paul II, wanted to know more about Karol Wojtyła, John Paul II's name, as a man, and gave away his admiration for him. I sensed he wanted to delve deeper, Navarro-Wall says, and he said to Fidel Castro, "Mr. President, I envy you." To which Castro said, "Why?" And he said, "Because the Pope prays for you every day. He prays that a man of your education may find the way of the Lord again." We talked about this earlier in the week. Castro raised and educated, raised by a devout Catholic mother, educated by Jesuits, but at a certain point made a decisive break with the faith and embraced the full atheistic agenda of modern communism. Anyway, back to this for just a minute. What did you ask Castro on behalf of the Holy See? In other words, what did the Pope ask of Castro in preparation for this visit? He said, "I explained to him that now that the date of the visit was set, it was going to be January 21st, 1998, it would be interesting if it were a great success." He said, "Cuba needs to surprise the world," Navarro-Wall said he told him. Fidel agreed. So Navarro-Wall said, "I added something about the surprises the Pope was expecting. I asked Castro for Christmas, which was just around the corner, to be celebrated as an official holiday for the first time since the start of the revolution." That's interesting. I did not know that Christmas, I guess it makes sense. You have an officially atheistic administration. You're not going to have an official holiday of Christmas. But so I started to think, it sort of made, and Castro was a dictator on many levels and, of course, committed atrocities and all the rest. But it also means that he was essentially, and if you're a child of the 70s and 80s, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. He was the Burgermeister Meisterburger. You remember the Burgermeister Meisterburger? Hurt himself on a toy in the old claymation Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Hurt himself on a toy and therefore banned toys, banned Christmas. There'll be no more toy makers for the king, fixing their toys. This is what Castro had become, a caricature, really. Anyway, Castro equivocated a little bit. He said it would be very difficult as Christmas fell right in the middle of the sugarcane harvesting season. Again, all of this is in the Vatican Insider. I'll post a link to it on the show's Facebook page. Navarro-Wall responded, "But the Holy Father would like to be able to publicly thank you for this gesture once he lands in Havana." After a long discussion, Castro finally said yes, although he did add, "But it could be for this year only." Navarro-Wall said, "All I said was, great, the Pope will be grateful to you for this, and as for next year, we'll see." As we know, to this day, Christmas is still celebrated as a public holiday in Cuba. I think that's pretty cool. So Pope John Paul II, through his spokesman, Joaquin Navarro-Wall, there's an interesting photo here. You know, it was only 7 years, actually. Yeah, 7 years before John Paul II's death. You can already see he's posing in this picture here with Fidel Castro. You can Castro in a not in his olive-green fatigues, but in a double-breasted suit with cufflinks, dressed for the occasion. But you can already see in John Paul II the beginning effects of his Parkinson's disease, or let's say the advancing effects of Parkinson's disease. But pretty cool. Let's see. On the flight to Havana, a journalist asked the Pope what advice he would give to the U.S. president regarding the stance it should adopt toward Cuba. John Paul II said, "To change." Then he was asked what he expected from Cuba's president. And this is how he responded. "I expect him to explain his true nature to me as a man, as a leader, and as a commander in chief. When they had their face-to-face meeting, he remembers the mass in the Plaza de Revolucion with the Castro brothers in the front row and the crowd shouting, "Libertad, Libertad," as the Pope pronounced his homily. He says, "And I remember the words in which Fidel bid John Paul II goodbye at the airport before he set off back to Rome. Thank you for everything you said, even for those words I may not have liked." Interesting. Anyway, if you've got a comment, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Be back in just a minute. We'll ask the question of the day. It's going to have a little bit to do with palliative care, which will be my topic in the second hour with Jessica McFarland, palliative care physician. As I said at the bottom of the hour, I look forward to my friend Dr. Alan Alday coming by for a visit. We'll talk about behavior, family behavior, child behavior, parental behavior, how they each impact one another, and particularly Alan wants to talk about it through the lens of St. Francis's math, which should be an interesting thing indeed. Continue to pray for the people of Gatlinburg, Tennessee, for those who have lost lives, homes, businesses, all the rest through the fire, and pray for my good friend Greg, who is in the final stages of cancer. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Redbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this December 2nd. A question of the day, we're going to be talking with Jessica McFarland, palliative care physician at the University of Kentucky, in the second hour. And we're going to be talking about pain management, what palliative care is about, trying to correct some misconceptions and all the rest. So I'm asking the question, what is the most physically painful thing that you've ever experienced in your life? What finally brought you relief? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You know, it's the kind of thing you can look back on now and say, whew, glad I'm not going through that anymore. Most physically painful thing you've ever had to endure or experience, and what was it that brought you relief? 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Here's some of the responses we've gotten on Facebook. Kimberly says, ruptured disc when I was 17, and she had surgery. Let's see. Alan says, I think an abscessed molar. I wanted to knock myself out, taking hot showers in the middle of the night, and ibuprofen helped. Ooh, anything mouth-related, no fun. Deacon Kevin, says, spiral fracture of tibia, compound fracture of fibula. At first, I was okay. After adrenaline decreased, not so okay. Let's see. Laura says, kidney stones. Other than throwing up or a hot shower, pounding on my back, no relief till it passed. Dry socket after wisdom teeth. Ooh. My daughter had that a couple of years ago. She still talks about it in sort of haunting tones. She said, 2 days suffering, then instant relief when the dentist put a little bit of clove gum in there. Wow. 573-4BREAD-4. If you want to chime in, I'll share maybe a few more of these later. Wow. Yeah. Kidney stone I've had too. I have this weird thing about kidney stones, and I've not ever had, I mean, I'm embarrassed when I tell you how small the kidney stones that I've had are. It's hard to believe that they could cause that much pain in terms of their minuscule nature. But man, I get them every 9 years, which is strange. I had my first one in 1994. Then I had one in 2003. And then I had one in 2012. And each time it was, I think, one stone, and I passed it. But it was about, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 days of agony. So now, 9 years from 2012, I'm dreading 2021. And I want to make sure that I may want to avoid trips overseas, let's just say, in 2021. But I remember the last time I actually had to ask our administrative assistant on our hallway over at my office at the diocese to drive me to the doctor. I couldn't drive myself, and I knew what was happening because I'd experienced it before. And so we climbed in her car, her van, I remember, and we were driving. There's a freeway that sort of encircles Lexington here where we live and broadcast from. And at a certain point, I had to ask her to pull over on the shoulder so I could throw up. It's worst stuff I've ever experienced, without a doubt. By the way, my wife chimed in on this list and said childbirth and an epidural is what gave her relief. Yes, but except for our one child that she had sans epidural. Not something I want to witness ever again. I'll just say that. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Looking at sports-related stuff, I see where Houston Rockets went in double overtime into Golden State. Alex, sorry about that, buddy. Rockets went in into Golden State and won, and I'm sitting here looking at it. James Harden, of course, triple-double. 29 points, 13 assists, 15 rebounds. Alex, he's a man. James Harden, no doubt. And let's see what the Kevin Durant with 39, Steph Curry with 28. Man, how did they lose? Must have been a heck of a ball game. So yeah, it's the Western Conference of the NBA, I think, is shaping up to be a serious bloodbath down to the end. Football wise, let's see. Of course, we got all the conference championship games going on this weekend, and to finally get in place the who are going to be the four teams in the national playoff. NFL-wise, the Cowboys continuing their winning streak last night. I guess that makes them 11-1 now with a win over the Minnesota Vikings, who are in free fall after starting off 5-0. I think they're now 6-6. And then if you look down, I'm trying to look at one of the big games this weekend. Kansas City at Atlanta could be pretty big, I guess. San Francisco at Chicago, that's kind of a battle of basement dwellers there. My Tampa Bay Bucks with a big game at San Diego. The Giants at Pittsburgh, that could be interesting. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll see how all that unfolds. I wanted to get to this article that I came across. Emma Green, who writes for The Atlantic, she does as good a job as anybody with that publication, particularly writing on issues related to religion. Very fair-minded, I think, a writer in terms of covering a religion and knows the subject. You know, one of the things that is often criticized with the press, that they don't get religion. And there are many of them that don't. They're so thoroughly secular and just can't even relate to persons who have religious convictions. They have a hard time writing about it. Emma Green, a notable exception to that. But she's got an article here caught by Tom Brady, sociologist of religion. And it's a new documentary series she's reviewing here, co-produced by Tom Brady, by Michael Strahan, and by Gautam Chopra, son of New Age guru Deepak Chopra. She says it's a surprisingly meditative look at the way sports give people a sense of meaning in life. This is a new documentary that's called Religion of Sports. And as I said, the aforementioned three odd bedfellows, Tom Brady, Michael Strahan, and Gautam Chopra have put together this show. Over six episodes, airs on DirecTV's Audience Network. I need to get on there and check it out. As she says, Chopra is at best working in loose metaphor because defining religion is devilishly difficult. But they do make some points, right, that religion has a way that gives communities a form of meaning-making and community formation and all the rest. Oftentimes serving as a sense of, religious devotion. It's, unlike other religious groups that are declining, sports seems to maintain a fairly even hold on the American public and on the American psyche. Kind of looking at some of the points that they made here, because I think they're very notable. You know, just like you've got, you've got particular liturgical acts that come with religion and worship. There are particular ritualistic acts when it comes to being a sports fan. There's a liturgical sort of calendar for religion. Same with sports. You've got your high and holy days like Super Bowl Sunday or Final Four weekend and all the rest. People come together across ethnic lines, across cultural boundaries and all the rest. Chopra actually intones during the introduction with images of stadiums and religious pilgrimages that sports have believers, true believers. They have priests, they have gods, they have rituals, they have miracles, they have sacrifices, they unite us, they are calling. Well, I'm going to check this out and get back to you on it because I do think that's a fascinating concept. As someone who is both a religious person in terms of my Catholic faith, but someone who also, as you know, if you've listened to this program, I love sports. And I rise and fall with my teams. I, can be in a good mood or a bad mood depending on how they do. It's probably not the healthiest thing in the world, but it does have religious type dynamics for sure. All right, so we'll get back to that. Let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We've got a few as we span the globe, as we like to do, to find examples of human beings not putting their best thinking forward. All right, how about an Australian man who took what he thought was a breast implant that he found on the beach. He took it to authorities thinking it was evidence perhaps of a drowning or of a murder. Turns out, that's right, it was a jellyfish. How you make the leap from grabbing something and thinking it's a breast implant? Wow. The second nominee we're going to give to doctor out in, and this is so terrible, I mean, it's not even funny, who has been had their privileges suspended in Colorado because this physician commented on social media and called Michelle Obama a monkey face. Really? My goodness. But the winner we're going to give to the guys, actually it was a state trooper and another guy, who thought a deer was dead. And they were trying to move it, and it jumped up, startled them half to death, and ran off into the woods. They got a video of it. All I will say is, did neither of these guys see Tommy Boy? I mean, seriously. Anyway, Alan Alday, he'll be back on in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
At the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Friday, December 2nd.
This Sunday will be the second Sunday of Advent. Lots of preparations and not just gift buying, if you know what I mean. blessed to have in the studio today my good friend Alan Alday. Alan, who's a professor at the University of Kentucky, works in the field of behavior analysis, also works with a lot of schools, classrooms, families, teachers, all in the realm of behavior, how the behavior of adults affects the behaviors of children and vice versa. And always good to have him here. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
So you're doing well. This will be your first Christmas. This is your first Advent and will be your first Christmas as a Catholic.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, somebody brought that up the other day, and I thought, you know, I guess that's right, because we joined right in that small window between the Christmas season mm-hmm. and Lent. I mean, we snuck right in. They let us in. They should have been watching the door a little closer, I guess. But
I guess as a good Baptist, Advent wasn't really part of your vocabulary for most of your life.
You know, Carrie and I talked about that because she is, she grew up Methodist and she remembers the Advent wreath and all. And she was just bringing it up to me. We were talking about this last night, actually. She said, I never realized that when I was talking about that, you had no idea what I was referring to. I said, I had never heard of an Advent wreath. I didn't know what you were talking about. I mean, it's, you know, I knew what a wreath was and, you know, I knew what, but I mean, that's, so yeah, it's really a great time. I mean, of reflection and, you know, preparation. I mean, it should be.
There are some variances. You know, there's actually a Baptist church here in Lexington, where we broadcast from, that does Advent and does Lent and all that stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're just trying. They're trying to ease on back. So, that's we didn't do that.
A little too popish for most Baptists, I would imagine.
I can promise you we did not do that. And I'm pretty confident the church my mom attends has no idea about any of that stuff. So, you know.
Well, you're keeping me guessing with topics. Last time you were on, we were breaking down The Gambler. The Kenny Rogers song, and now you're talking about St. Francis's math.
Yeah. So I'm going to, this has been something that's just been on my mind a lot lately, and I figure since we have the bully pulpit here, we can, you know.
There you go.
But I'm going to take off my behavior analyst hat, because this is really not it's about behavior, but not necessarily tied to behavior analysis per se.
Sure.
But I was just, I've been thinking about, the way things are going here in our country, and, you know, lots of unrest, anxiety, lots of all these other things. And I was thinking, obviously I'm 40, so I haven't lived, you know, like somebody said, when you're 80, let me talk to me. But I mean, over the last 20 years, things seem to have changed quite drastically in our attitudes and all. And so I got to thinking about, even on our home state here in Kentucky, on the seal, it says, you know, united we stand, divided we fall. And all the idea of indivisible, and then it got me to, it's sad to be in my head, as you can probably tell. So it led me to St. Francis, you know,
and you're talking about of Assisi, right?
Of Assisi, yes. St. Francis of Assisi. So, it made me think about his, you know, the prayer of St. Francis, and how the prayer of St. Francis, here's where the math comes in, really is about, you know, as we are divided, the prayer of St. Francis should help us to multiply. That's the best I could do. So, because what that, you know, what it is, you know, at this time where we're the most divided, those of us who are, you know, who are Christians and those of us who are Catholics should be multiplying like crazy. And I'm not a church scholar, and I'm not a historical scholar. So just for whoever's listening and I screw this up, hopefully they won't berate me too bad. But you know, one of the things that's always impressed me, even before I was a Catholic, was the fact that, you know, Christians basically turned an extremely pagan culture of Rome into a Christian culture without lifting a sword. I mean, that's actually pretty impressive. I mean, they didn't go to war. And I can remember, and I've tried my best to rack my brain on who wrote this, but I remember you know, one of the writings of in a letter to a Roman leader about, you know, because they were concerned about the Christians being,
sure,
being cannibals, because, you know, this is eating my body, mm-hmm, drink my blood, you know, and how they talked about when I went and looked at it, how they loved each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were so full of love and they served each other, and, you know, how whenever everybody was leaving Rome because of a plague, the Christians were not. And how that's been something that over throughout the last 2,000 years we have done. And I mean, I guess I feel like for us here in the U.S., I mean, now it's kind of, we're probably more divided than we've been at any point in my life. I wasn't alive in the 60s. Obviously, I wasn't alive in the 1860s when we truly were divided. But we are, in my life, this is the most divided I've ever seen. So I thought, well, you know, the prayer of St. Francis, I mean, he provides us that dichotomy, you know, and I brought it. So I have my cheat sheet here, because I can't remember it all, but I've just got to thinking about this is, you know, when instead of us as Catholics continuing along the division, we really need to be, now is the time that the it's ripe to multiply, and so that's, anyway, that's kind of what I was thinking. So
absolutely, I mean, well, and it's not just as a nation we're divided. I mean, this recent political election season, the presidential election, both in the whatever 2 years, what seemed like almost an endless campaign, and then the election, and then even in the aftermath, you look back over history and attempts to try to divide the church by tyrants and so forth through persecution or whatever means. But here we haven't needed any of that to divide us. The whole partisan political process has so divided us. And you could see it all over social media and everywhere else. And I think your point is well taken, that we have in many ways allowed ourselves to kind of be duped into thinking what the ultimate hope for us is in the culture. And it's not going to be elected officials. And, you know, we can have our opinions, but man, the devil's doing his work successfully. The one who scatters and divides, if something like this in a free society divides the people who should be united in Jesus Christ.
Right. And you know, and this is not, you know, I'm thankfully I'm not on social media.
You're probably a much healthier person.
But I've heard from many, many people about, you know, how, you know, I've lost friends over this, and I'm just thinking, you know, people are very, people that you interact with on a daily basis should always be more important than somebody that you'll never see. You know, I mean, it's just not worth it. And we've even had conversations with family members about, you know, politics is really not worth the relationship of a sibling. It's not worth, I mean, it's, you know, it's just something. I mean, it's not the end, and it's not the hope that we all live for. But you know, I was thinking about, I think it's John 13:35, where Jesus says, you know, something to the effect of, you know, for it's how you love that they will know you're my disciples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so here's what I hope to do. This is one of those, again, it's most cases, I come in with these great ideas, and then we'll see how they fall. But I was just going to read the prayer of St. Francis, and then kind of go back and break it down from a behavioral standpoint.
Absolutely,
not as a behavior analyst, but just as me as a citizen and of the church. So the prayer is, you know, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Well, if we just stop there, that's, there you go. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. So that is, you know, at least the prayer associated with St. Francis of Assisi. And I mean, and that's where, you know, multiplication. I mean, we should be living in such a way, I think, that we are multiplying the ranks of those who are, you know, both fallen away Catholics, those who are not yet Catholic, and we should be multiplying and stop dividing.
One of the things we say that, you know, to our children, I mean, the when you have a big family, the odds that any two people are in a conflict at any one time are significantly higher, you know. But we've had kids who've, you know, our kids are like any kids, they fight and all that stuff. But we've always said to them, you know, you have a choice in every scenario, mm-hmm. whether you're going to be an instrument of peace or you're going to be, you know, an agent of conflict. I mean, you have that decision to make, and we'll talk about this more when we get back from the break, but I think that certainly taps into what you're talking about, you know, from a behavioral perspective, the choice that we have to make. So we'll be back in a minute with Alan Alday. If you've got a question or a comment about anything we've talked about or one related to behavioral issues, give us a call or shoot a text, 573-4-BREAD-4. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on this Friday, the 2nd of December, here with my good friend, Dr. Alan Alday, professor at the University of Kentucky, regular guest, deals in the realm of behavior analysis, and we're talking about the math of St. Francis and the St. Francis prayer, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. I am asking the question today, what's the most physically painful thing you've ever experienced, and what brought you relief? I'm going to have Dr. Jessica McFarlane in the second hour talking about palliative care. Talking a little bit off the air, you said a bike wreck.
Yeah, I was probably about maybe 13 or 14, and I grew up in a small lumber company town. So I mean, there were log trucks everywhere, and I was going to cross a bridge, and the truck was coming at the same time, and it was either wreck the bike or hit the truck. And I figured a 13-year-old versus a fully loaded log truck, I would probably lose, so I chose to wreck. And, it scarred, just ripped my arm, like the skin off my arm and off my elbow specifically, and my back and knee. And I remember going home, and I wish I could say this was the thing that brought me the greatest peace. But, I could bend my elbow and you could see the bone. And, I mean, it was pretty disgusting. And my dad said, oh, you'll be fine. I was like, no, I'm not fine. It's not okay.
Toughen up, son.
Like, you let me see. And now, this is also the man who cut himself once and passed out because he barely, you know, if he saw a touch of his own blood, he would fall out. And here I am with my elbow showing. He's like, oh, you'll be fine. You don't need any stitches.
He was very tolerant of your pain, in other words.
It didn't hurt him at all. He said, I don't feel a thing. I thought, yeah, I bet you don't.
Well, I would say when I look at the comments I've gotten on this question on Facebook, the three top answers, and I can't give you them in order, but no doubt the top three are labor pain, of course. Who's going to argue there? Kidney stone, which I've experienced. But mine was even small, and it was horrible. I can't imagine people who have to have them operated on or broken up with, you know, some sort of supersonic ray or whatever. And then the third is dry sockets from wisdom teeth removal.
Oh.
I've heard that's all. My daughter had that. It's where they take the wisdom teeth out, and then something happens down in where the teeth were, I guess. And so those are the top three.
Well, you know, I always say with since we're expecting again. If men had babies, we'd have been extinct after the first generation. We'd had one baby, and they'd be like, "That's I'm out."
There's a lot of truth there, no doubt. All right, so let's get down. You wanted to break down this, you know, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace prayer. I was saying how we've kind of used that basic concept with our children, not always successfully, but in the midst of conflict, you know, how can you in your relationships here at home, for example, you can choose to be an instrument of peace or an agent of conflict, one or the other, really. And so what are you going to decide to do? So is that kind of the same basic idea?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I think what are we going to do? I mean, you think about all the things that have been going on with social media, with the presidential election. And as I said, I don't have social media, but I have heard many people say, yeah, I had to unfriend so-and-so, and I had to, you know, I just can't even pay attention to them anymore. And I was thinking, you know, so, I mean, one way we can be an instrument of peace is just not contribute to the chaos. I mean, that's kind of an easy thing. There's nothing in there that says you have to actually type a response to anybody. It's okay. And I think
someone's wrong on the internet. I have to correct them.
You know, it's, yeah. I get
which always works, by the way.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I think how many minds have been changed because of a Facebook argument or because you can tweet, you know, a more curt response than whatever, however many characters you get. But that's not going to change anybody's mind. You know, I mean, that's just not going to do it. And that's, so one thing, I mean, a simple thing to do is just not respond, you know. And as I think about the, you know, where there's hatred, let me sow love. I mean, so many of these are so many of the words we put words to certain behaviors. So how do you know somebody loves you? How do you know? Because, I mean, words are kind of cheap. I mean, you know, I mean, at least in the Greek, they had, you know, three different words for love, and we have one. Right. So I can say, I love your coffee cup. And I can say, I love my wife. So I'm using the same word, but I'm pretty confident I have different behaviors towards my wife than your coffee cup. So, you know, so thinking through what are we doing to sow love? I mean, because words are kind of cheap. I mean, I can say it all day, and I see it. You know, I'm to the point now. Our Solomon, our oldest, is I'm seeing myself in him more and more, and he reminds me of me because he'll say the right thing, but he doesn't always do the right thing. But he says exactly what you want to hear, but yet he doesn't do it. And I'm like, oh, well, what do you know? You're like me. And it's been, but what are we doing to sow love with people? And I think sometimes, you know, it's true. Speaking of Solomon, a gentle answer turns away wrath. And that's one that we've always talked about in our house is, you know, when somebody's mad, a gentle answer will turn away wrath, because if you give a gentle answer, then you're not feeding the fire. I mean, you're just right. You're not doing it. I mean, it stops it. And a gentle answer, you know, is not just the words that you say, but the way in which you say them and your body language. I mean, if you're all tensed up and your, you know, fists are clenched and your teeth are gritting, you're like, I said, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, that's not really a gentle answer. I mean, there's, you know, so there are nonverbal and ways in which we need to do that. I think, you know, as you look at, you know, pardon. I mean, of course, now we had the most, at least again of my life, the most contentious election of my life. Then we have Thanksgiving, so everybody gets to get together for that to talk about it. And now we get to have Christmas, and I can't imagine all the conversations with that. But, you know, one of the things that I find to be a really powerful thing is, you know, where there's injury, pardon. If there is somebody that you have injured, one of the ways that we ask, will you forgive me? Now, we don't say I'm sorry, because I'm sorry is kind of doesn't matter. But will you forgive me is a very, it's slightly different words, obviously, but it speaks a much different volume. And I'll even do that in other relationships, you know, professional relationships. If I've done something wrong, instead of saying, I'm sorry I did that, I'll say, you know, will you forgive me for blah, 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 because that's really what I'm asking. I don't want them to say, hey, I have sorrow. I want to know, will you forgive me? And And, you know, but that takes...
Which acknowledges, I mean, you know, what I like about that, too, and that's really a good thing in marriage, because I'm sorry sometimes can be just more about me. It can be more just saying I'm sorry alleviates, makes me feel, soothes me somehow. But when you say, will you forgive me, you're admitting that you are powerless to restore the relationship, that it's the other person who has it in their hands whether to restore it or not.
Right. And, you know, and the look on people's face when you say something like that is usually fairly priceless because, they're like, you know, people just don't talk that way.
Right.
But what it does is, you know, it fixes injury. I mean, it repairs the injury that's there. And for those of us who are Catholics or Christians, if you have family members that you got into an argument with over Thanksgiving, how powerful would it be for your children to see? Because I'm sure your children got to hear you fussed on the way home about, well, Uncle Joe, he's just so, you know, he should know better than that. I just can't even be around him. How great would it be for your children to go up to Uncle Joe at Christmas and say, you know, will you forgive me? Because I was very uncharitable in talking to you. And you know, and you are my uncle, and you are worthy of my respect, no matter what we disagree on. Because, you know, I mean, so you think about things like this, and I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think there's so many. One of the things I found about like behavior analysis, just speaking of that, is as humans, we try to make everything so blasted complicated, and most of the time, it really is very simple. I mean, most of the time, it is a simple answer will solve a lot of problems. And, you know, so people say, oh, well, you don't know my uncle. He's, you know, he's this and he's that. Well, yeah, you know, I have one of those too, you know. And I know that what's going to change somebody's heart is not arguing with them. I mean, but you know, listening to them and saying, you know, and giving them time. That's how we do this. I mean, you know, where there's sadness, we should, you know, let there be joy. And so, you know, we should always be joyful. I mean, I'm not ho-hum, oh, our country, you know, I think we pray for whoever's in charge, and we do that until the day that I have no breath left in me. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if I agree or disagree or anything with them. I mean, that's, you know, because... I mean, you look back in, you know, First and Second Kings, there was a lot of bad ones. But, you know, God's faithful and he always is. So I guess...
Well, you can look back at a history of popes the same way and bishops and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's, yeah. And that's the...
Because, you know, all they have to choose from are people like you and me.
Thank goodness. All I can say is anybody ever hears me running for president, just go ahead and lock me up because I've officially lost my mind. So, you know, I guess that's the thing is just, I think sometimes we just need reminders. Sometimes we just need reminders that we should be instruments of peace. And, you know, and St. Francis, I mean, he's probably one of the most... Or St. Francis of Assisi, one of the most popular saints. And, I mean, we should try to be like that.
It's a great prayer to work into our prayer routine. And we'll all be facing situations, maybe even today, where we have a decision to make. So, Alan, thanks for being there. Yeah. Alan Alday, always a pleasure to have on. Blessings to you and to Carrie and Solomon and Noah and little...
Luke. Yeah.
Wasn't sure whether you were going public with that. So, all right. Wonderful. That's blessings to you. And we'll be back in a minute. This is Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.